Today's bonus episode of Rob Has a Podcast, catching up with Ben Mandelker from Watch What Crappens, is sponsored by our friends over at Beachbody On Demand. If you are a regular listener to the podcast, you know I've been doing Beachbody On Demand all through 2017. Started out, it was my New Year's resolution. I've been able to keep it up, which was no small feat for me because I am a notorious procrastinator, not somebody who likes to spend a lot of time exercising. But Beachbody On Demand has been a great thing for me because for a number of different things. Number one, it is much more convenient for me than going to the gym. So the less obstacles I have to put in my way of going to the gym, the more likely I am to exercise. And it is also a lot more cost efficient than joining a gym and certainly than having a personal trainer. I have been able to pick and choose the things that I want to do. I've gone through P90, P90X. They've got a workout program for you no matter what your body type is, whether you're looking to do more or cardio or weight training or yoga. They've got it all, and they've also got a chance for you to try it for free for 1 month. Just text the word Rob to 303030. Beachbody On Demand is great because you can access it on a number of different devices, whether it is a set-top box like an Apple TV or a Roku, or on your computer, on your phone or tablet. You can access it anywhere. You can put resistance bands in your suitcase. You can do these workouts on the road while you're traveling. You're not going to find anything that's more convenient or flexible, and you're going to run out of excuses why you're not exercising. So check out this brand new service, Beachbody On Demand. Over 1 million members. You can try it out for free for 1 month. Just text the word Rob to 303030. For full access to the entire platform for free, just text the word Rob to 303030. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we are back to do some bonus coverage here of the Big Brother season. And we've been working on this interview for a while, that we have been trading tweets back and forth that we were finally going to do this, but I'm very excited to bring in my fellow reality TV podcaster. Please welcome Ben from Watch What Crappens. Ben, how are you?
Hey, Rob, what's going on? Thank you so much for having me on this podcast.
I'm very excited to have you here to talk some Big Brother and about what you're doing. And you and I had actually done your podcast way back when we both used to be on the same podcast network. And now here we are. I feel like that we've had a similar trajectory over these last couple of years.
Yeah, it's been really great because, you know, we both are in the quote unquote entertainment vertical, as they say.
Yes.
And, you know, my podcast is all about Bravo TV. You obviously focus more on like Big Brother and Survivor, et cetera. And, you know, we've both sort of like risen up, and it's been really fun rising up with you. And we go back probably at this point, like 12 or 13 years just from living in LA and just running into each other, et cetera.
Yeah. So when did you get out here? Have you been out here since then?
I've been out here since 2001.
How did you end up being associated with all the crazy reality stars at that point?
You know, it was the most bizarre thing. The year was 2004. My roommate was a tech guy, a computer science guy. I'm a writer. We both liked watching reality TV. And he was like, hey, let's start a blog, because he wanted to explore blog technology. And it was be a way for me to write about TV. So we started this blog, TVgasm. And we just started writing recaps about TV, including Big Brother and Survivor and many other Amazing Race. And it was right time, right place. 2004 was when all these blogs were just suddenly exploding. We were one of a few TV blogs that were out there, and ours just like it exploded. It got huge. We wound up getting bought out. It was a whole thing. And then since then, I've just sort of always been linked to reality TV in some form as like a commentator.
I'm looking at the iTunes charts. We are right next to each other, side by side, and very nice to be exactly on even footing coming into this podcast. What was it about the Bravo shows, for people that are not familiar with what you do on Watch What Crappens? What was it about those shows that stood out for you versus any other type of reality?
First of all, I mean, the Real Housewives, they're so petty, it's hilarious. And as I said right before the show began, I'm a very petty person. Like, that's just who I am. And so that really spoke to me. But what was interesting was that I sort of fell into that because we got bought out by TVgasm. And after a year, I left and I wanted to do my own thing, and I started up my own little blog. And at one point, I had a non non-compete with TVGasm. I wasn't allowed for like a year to write about TV. So then when the non-compete was up, I was like, oh, good, I can start writing recaps again. And I found that all the stuff that I used to recap, I wasn't getting good numbers on. So I started recapping something else. I started recapping Bravo stuff and Real Housewives. And that got really good traffic. So I just sort of leaned into it. And then I just sort of became like a Bravo person. And then like one thing led to another. And then started Watcher Crappens 5 years ago with my co-host, Ronnie Karam. And then at that time, Matt Whitfield, who was our third co-host, but he left after about a year or so. And we just... It's like, okay, well, my life is Bravo.
Terrible move to leave the Watch What Crappens podcast, right?
He's very successful in his own way. So I think it was, we all rose up in our own little boats on the rising tide.
Ben, you guys are doing great on Patreon as well, right?
Yeah, basically, we live off of it. We were actually very inspired by your success on it. Our Patreon page, if anyone wants to support, patreon.com/watchforcrappens. It's amazing. And actually, what's been really fun about it is, you know, we have to give all those like rewards, different tiers. So we do a bonus episode once a week. And what's fun about the bonus episode is that it gives us a chance to talk about anything that we want to talk about. So it's usually where Ronnie and I will chat about some non-Bravo stuff. And we very frequently will talk about Big Brother over the summer. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we get our Big Brother demons out.
Right. And you are an old school Big Brother fan. You're not some Johnny come lately, right?
Yeah, I am. I got on board at Big Brother 3. I've been here ever since. I love it. I love it truly, even though it's a show that often leaves me angry and frustrated. It's just Stockholm syndrome or something. I bow down at the altar of Julie Chen. I love it. I just love it.
Okay. And so we're going to talk about Big Brother 19, and we're going to talk through the Thursday night double eviction. We're recording this on Friday afternoon, so the feeds are still currently down, so we don't know anything past that point. So just to give a sense, if you're worried about getting spoiled for Sunday night's show or anything like that, we don't know any of that right now. Can you just real quick, can you talk about what's the biggest difference in your mind between Big Brother and what you see on all the different Bravo shows that you cover?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think with Big Brother, obviously it's a competition, and Bravo at this point doesn't really have too many competitions left. So just based on that, I mean, there's an unspoken competition to who can be the most popular housewife on any given franchise. I think probably on Bravo shows, you know, you have people who are more concerned with their image. Those shows are more about showing off wealth. And those shows are also a little bit more preoccupied with women fighting. whereas Big Brother, I think, you know, you forget that those cameras are on you. I've been lucky enough to go on to Big Brother Media Day twice and be in that house for what, 12 or 14 hours. And it's easy to forget, you know, that you're being recorded. I feel like you're seeing some more raw stuff coming out. It's also much more low rent than Bravo. I mean, let's be honest.
Ben, how much do you keep up with the feeds? Are you just TV only?
I'm like a mix.
Okay.
It's funny. Some seasons I'm just like constantly on Joker's updates, reading every single detail. Some seasons I'm like watching a lot of Big Brother After Dark. I never actually watch the feeds because I'm cheap and I just don't pay for them. But sometimes this season I've been doing like a mixture of both. Like some weeks I'm like, I kind of want the surprise. I want to see how this is going to work out. So I'll stay away from going on Joker's updates. And then some weeks I'm like, I have to know. I will always go for spoilers when there's an endurance head of household competition.
Yeah.
Because I hate endurance head of household competitions. They drive me nuts. And I feel like, because I feel like they're manipulative to the viewer. I feel like if they're drawing out something, and it always is the same sort of arc. And it's always they're cold, they're standing up there, they're tired, they're getting paint splattered on them. There's some like fake seagull on a string. And
there are a lot of bird poop in these Big Brother endurance challenges. That doesn't seem to be a common trope.
Yeah. So sometimes I'm like, I just want to know. Because I am more interested in the scheming and the conversations than I am in watching people hang onto a wall.
Right. If you were an alien and your only idea of what was going on Earth was watching Big Brother, you would think that, you know, explosive bird poop was like a major yes. problem people were dealing with here.
Exactly. And it's amazing how they can incorporate that into any theme. They're like, today we're going to the hardware store and watch out. The caulk is exploding. And it's like, there's a bird in the Home Depot. It's like, how do they get a bird into every scenario? Every single, do you remember the spider one? There was like a, that, remember that crazy spider web challenge from, I think maybe like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was the same thing. We were like, watch out, the spider has an upset stomach. And then it's like bird poop. And I was like, it's a spider. Spiders don't do that.
Yeah, we'll have to watch for it. I don't think we've seen it yet this season.
I mean, I think as a macro note, I think some of the Big Brother challenges have gotten a little stale. I like certain ones that are, that there's like a sense of ritual about them. Like, oh, it's Otev. Everyone loves Otev and Zingbot mm-hmm. and things like that. But I could use some more variety. Like, I don't have a warm tingling sensation when it's like, oh, it's the time when they're carrying a little cup of water over a slippery surface into a giant ball and they're going to do this for, you know, 6 hours.
Yeah, no, that's a standard, and they haven't done that yet this season, so be on the lookout for that. That could be the HOH competition when we come back on Sunday night.
It probably will be, yeah.
So this season, I guess, in some ways has been like a Bravo show in that there has mm-hmm. not been a lot of strategy, and we've had a lot of big fights going on in the house, and a lot of them have been not necessarily Paul, but Paul's minions, sort of like Paul will like organize the group and say, okay, let's go after this person today. And we see a lot of that happening in the house. So I guess, what is your mileage on Paul?
You know what? By the way, first of all, great comparison to Bravo, because that is very Real Housewives. That's like, I mean, we could be watching like Bethany Frankel organize people against, you know, Ramona.
She's the Paul of Real Housewives of New York.
I would normally say that, but I like Bethany and Paul. I've actually never been a Paul fan. He's always really annoyed me because I always felt that even though he's, yes, very smart, he's too on. I feel like he came in last season. I'm going to have nightmares now. I feel like he came on last season with his persona. And like, if I have to listen to him in a diary room one more time, and I will have to hear him many more times, but if I have to hear him go in and be like, I'm like, I can't. It's like every single time.
He does have a cadence to how he talks where everything is always like, this morning, your boy went to the store, and then I bought some milk, and I brought it home to eat my breakfast, and guess what? It wasn't good.
Yeah, it's like, it was 1% milk, and I can't have 1% milk. I need to have 2% milk. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go back to the store, and I'm going to show them what 2% milk really is. I'm like, okay.
Oh!
Yeah, it's like, it's so affected. It really bothers me. I don't know why, but I think this season what's bothered me more has not been his personality. It's been really that he's been calling the shots. And I think it's like what you said on last night's show. It's almost not really his fault. Or Jessica said that it's not really his fault. It's that these people don't want to look any other way. I call it the Boston Rob syndrome, because mm-hmm. the season that Boston Rob won Survivor, it was dreadful. We just watched the Purple Kellys of the world just, you know, follow him down off
a
cliff.
In fairness, Purple Kelly wasn't on that season, but
she wasn't?
No, she was.
Well, she's more of like a state of mind.
You mean Purple Kelly more as a principal than the actual principal Kelly?
The principal of Purple Kelly was in effect on the Boston Rob season.
Yeah, she was somebody who that her type was on this season. Yeah, and so you have a lot of people that are sort of just like following Paul around and doing what he wants. Have any of the new players been a standout for you?
I have to say, just in general, I think this has been an excellent season. Despite the terrible showing of strategy, every episode that I'm watching, I'm like on the edge of my seat. I think it's great. I think this has been a wonderful cast, despite their strategical flaws.
Like the bird poop, they've been explosive. That's the one thing where it's like the house is a powder keg, but it just everything, it's like the liquid Terminator. It just like it explodes into a million pieces, but then it just like constantly just goes back to the original shape of everybody just following Paul's orders.
And that really just supports my theory that maybe these people need to be thrown into a vat of molten lava. I don't know.
Yeah.
But liquid nitrogen. Think that something. I'm shocked that I became such a Jessica and Cody fan, because in the very beginning, I actually really liked Cody, because I loved how he was a man of few words and was so intense and was so crazy. And like when Paul did not give him a friendship bracelet, I was like, yes, this is going to be the guy to take down Paul. And then he came into power, and the first thing he did is he brought all the cool kids together. And I was like, ugh, I hate that. I hate that. It's like the jocks and the pretty girls. And then they go after the nerds. I hate that. And so that sort of played out. And then obviously they had Jessica and Cody had their fall from grace. And then they were really obnoxious and just like they were calling Josh a coward. I'm not in defense of Josh. I can't stand Josh. But like they were being really bratty mm-hmm. and pouty. And then something sort of switched where I was like, you know what, though? I'm with them. I understand them. They are frustrated. They are dealing with fools. I think they made some huge, huge mistakes. And I know that Jessica doesn't want to be corrected for her mistakes, but she needs to know what she did wrong. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, the two of them, I think, tapped into something very interesting. That Cody, to me, was such an interesting figure in this Big Brother world because you have mm-hmm. everybody who comes into Big Brother. And I don't know if you want to call it like Stockholm Syndrome or they just every Big Brother contestant, they want to be such a people pleaser and you know the producers are like saying like give us more energy on that give us that again like tell us about explain it again but this time like be louder and Cody is the only person in the history of Big Brother to come into this experience and say I'm not giving you that I'm not doing that no this is stupid.
I think that's what ultimately is what made him so appealing is that I feel like he's very authentic to himself, good or bad. I mean, I just recently this morning heard some very controversial things he said in the house, which I did not agree with.
Yeah.
But for better or for worse, he was just being himself. And like, that's a really
he's
good counterpoint
phony.
To Paul.
And there's something to that.
Yeah. Like when you hear Elena doing her whole shtick in a diary room or Paul, it drives me nuts. I'm like, I actually just want to see you be you, like be a good strategist and just be normal. Like I'm not here for the Paul show. So I think Cody's intensity and his inability sort of to get out of his own way, I thought was very fascinating just to watch as a person. Like his conversations with Jessica were really interesting. A lot of showmances are terrible to watch. And I actually was surprised how much I was enthralled by their conversations about, you know, are you a hothead? Are you always going to be this way? I also, by the way, Jessica, I loved the way she stood up for herself. She did have a tendency to lean towards the, self-pitying mm-hmm. and whining and being bratty and calling names, which you think would actually really outweigh all the good stuff. But I felt like I did watch the raw footage of that giant brawl they got into, that big fight in the house when Alex was coming out, when they were all basically like, let's get under their skin. And I was like, you know, Jessica really stood her ground and I appreciated the way that she stood up for herself. And you know what? She was a smart player and she unfortunately let Cody call a few too many strategic shots that I think really did her in.
Yeah, and the entire house was against them after the point where Cody comes back into the game. Even, you know, and originally before Cody left the game, you had everybody against them. And you have this situation where the whole house teams up on people. And I don't think that anybody in the house seems to realize this. And again, this is such a Big Brother trope, all the way back, that whoever is the underdog in the house, that is who is going to get the support and the goodwill of the audience for the most part. And it seems like there's such a disconnect. And I don't know, maybe they are aware of that. And that's why they tried to spin it that, oh, no, they attacked us first. They made this preemptive strike against Paul. And so that's why we're all against them. But they just seem to believe that, OK, Paul is popular and they're bad and everybody is rooting for us to do this. So we need to do it more when it's really the opposite of that, where that the more they've antagonized Justin Cody, they've actually turned them into where they were sort of villainous characters at the start of the season that they ended up really having a lot of people rooting for them on the way out the door.
Yeah, I mean, every time I get angry about the current state of the house, I go to Joker's Updates and I look at the house guest rankings and I look at Cody and Jessica at the top of the rankings. It's usually one of them. It's flip-flops.
Right.
They're at the top. Raven's at the bottom. She's been at the bottom for, I don't know, like 5 weeks now with Matt right above her. Like, and like, it gives me such joy to see Cody and Jessica at the top and like Paul's whole army all the way at the bottom. It makes me happy because I know even if Paul is like triumphant and all these people are triumphant, they're going to come out and they're going to see that people hate them. That makes me happy. I don't know why. You know, it is actually like it's a callback to season 6 and the friendship. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the friendship?
Yes, of course.
Friendship.
Truly one of the most hilariously awful alliances of all time. They're probably the best villain alliance. And they thought they were so popular. And when Janelle kept on winning rewards and April just wanted
Janelle.
To talk. love Janelle.
Yes.
My favorite.
Yes.
She's my number one.
That is literally in the thing I used to record the podcast that Ben has his handle as right now. Ben loves Janelle.
I want it to be very explicit. I want to make my intentions known. But I'm actually concerned now that Cody's out, do we have as strong of an underdog? But I think Mark will fill those shoes
for as long
well.
As he's in the house. Yeah, Mark will God. Be the underdog. Yeah. And you're right about that with Cody and Jessica being, you know, who are far from perfect people, you know, who people who have, as we've talked about, have like, you know, Cody has said regrettable things and they've had regrettable conversations with Josh in the house, among others. Yeah. And they've ended up becoming sort of like the fan favorites, at least in terms of the people who watch the stuff super closely, because that they are just the resistance to the establishment. And I think that you have so many people that are in the house that just are only getting the game from Paul. And Paul doesn't, he knows maybe like how a Big Brother season goes, but he doesn't really know what the fan base likes. So he was a recruit a year ago.
I know. I think that Jessica's biggest problem that she made was in the week when Cody was gone, she went and tried to reestablish bonds with her former alliance of Mark, Elena, Raven, Matt, and whoever else. She really, at least according to CBS, so I could be wrong, live feeders may correct me, but it appeared that she was really interested in repairing those relationships. And that was, in my mind, the moment when she should have gone to the outsiders, Ramsey's Alex, Jason, Kevin, maybe even, and been like, okay, well, we're all the outsiders now, let's band together and take out these showmances, etc. I don't know why she didn't do that. I feel like Jessica's always been the popular girl, and her need to be accepted by the popular kids overpowered her clarity in finding new allies.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of like the classic Big Brother scenario where you have like the one strong alliance at the beginning of the season, whether it's like, hey, we're the six people that are outside right now, or we're the first seven people who got in the house, this will be the alliance. And then it looks like, oh, they may run the table. And then the group that's the outsiders, they come together, and that's always really fun. But it just has never been able to materialize this season, because Paul has such a big group and they have a stranglehold on anybody who sort of rises up. Everybody's so afraid to step out of bounds. What do you think of Alex this season?
I'm glad you brought her up, because I was just about to say something about her. So in the beginning of the season, I really liked her a lot. I liked that she was one of the nerds. I liked that she was strong and that she was going to take down the popular kids. And that when Cody was like very patronizing to her, being like, you know, you should work with me, I'll take you far. And she's like, screw that. You know, I'll do it myself. I loved that. I loved that attitude. I felt like Alex was going to come in and just destroy people.
And then she won the second HOH.
Right. Now, I'm trying to remember what happened when she won the second.
I think she won the endurance comp. And then I think that was when Cody.
Yeah,
she put up. That was when Cody went out on the back door.
Oh, yeah. Because Jason was like, don't put up Jessica. I don't remember. It gets cloudy now.
They backdoored Cody in the second week.
Yeah. And so I still held out hope, because she had a conversation with Jason being like, listen, we're just going to play with them, play their game, and then we're going to take them out. But somehow she started working with Paul, and now she's just there with Paul, and Paul's gonna probably get her before she gets him. I hope she takes out Paul. She's the only hope, and she has been sinking in my esteem over the past few weeks, which makes me sad, and I hope she and Christmas too. I actually really like Christmas still, even though I know she's not very popular anymore. I actually still do like her. I would like Alex and Christmas to turn the table, shake up the season, get rid of Paul, and then, you know, game on.
What do you think will have to happen for there to be an uprising against Paul?
Such a good question. It's hard, because it may happen too late. I happened to turn on Big Brother After Dark 3 nights ago, and Alex and Paul were talking, and Alex was like, okay, first out we get Cody, then Matt, then Elena. I'm not Matt, Mark, then Elena, then Matt and Raven. So by the time they're done with all that, if that comes through, you know, there may not be enough people for an uprising.
If it happens, I feel like it may not happen until we get down to like five people, where it would only take, you know, one person to put him up on the block, and then just like one vote to evict, and the HOH breaks a tie. And I think that you could see a scenario like that. But I feel like that Paul is in this for the long haul. But I've been saying that I think that CBS doesn't necessarily mind this. That that's the case right now, because that in addition to sort of just being sheep, a lot of these people just are really boring, and that I don't think that they would have much of a show without Paul. And the ratings are doing really well. And I think that the average casual fan, as you mentioned, like the TV shows are explosive, and so that they're not really hurting in terms of that. But it's just the gameplay has been lackluster. But if you lose Paul, who's the biggest personality in the house, I don't know what this show is that people are watching three times a week.
Yeah, I mean, someone's gonna have to shake it up. I mean,
like, how much Whistlenut and Alex and Matt and Raven and Christmas and Josh are you gonna have in an episode if you took Paul out of it?
Well, I mean, Alex can definitely get feisty, and you know, Christmas can be crafty, and obviously Josh can make a lot of noise. Someone's gonna,
like, literal noise with pots and pans.
You know, Josh is an interesting character. I mean, wow.
Yeah, you said you hate him.
I mean, there are moments when I felt bad, like. There was one shimmering brief moment being in the season, basically when Jessica and Cody were like, "You're a coward, you're a coward." They were basically being the cool kids beating up on, like, you know, the beleaguered fat kid. And then Josh was crying, and I was like, "Oh, I actually feel bad for him. He's like a tortured soul." And that was the last time I felt that way, because he's awful. I do feel, I mean, he is a big softy, obviously, and he is someone who clearly has been mocked and tormented all his life, so I don't want to add on to it, but at the same time, he's really awful. I mean, he taunts people, he screams, he gets loud, and the moment someone steps up to him, he's like, "Don't touch me, don't touch me," and then he cries. It's like classic bully, actually. You know, the word bully gets thrown around a lot on reality TV, but he actually exhibits the classic behaviors of being a bully.
Yeah, I think he also has the Bravo thing where he's like looking to get into TV fights constantly. And I think that's just like the pots and pans. He just wants to antagonize people, like, and really the sort of like the genesis behind sort of like us getting to this point today was I was on the Kate Casey podcast, and that's how we sort of started this conversation on Twitter. And I had watched an episode of The Real Housewives of New York to talk to her. And in the episode that I was watching, this was when they all went to dinner and then they got into a fight over, I don't even understand what they were fighting about, of that there was a ripoff of Bethany's drink line. And Dorinda, just for no reason, just started saying, "Clip, clip, 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 clip."
Yeah.
And then that's like Josh in the Big Brother house, where he'll just like antagonize people, like, "Okay, meatball, you want to come at meatball, linguine, fettuccine Alfredo?" Like, it's just like, okay, we're just yelling things that nothing is making sense that we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know why he chose the Olive Garden menu as his insult inspiration of choice. I don't know. It's like, it drives me. I don't know who gave him the green light that, like, oh, we all want to hear him say meatball. I feel like it was the producers. I feel like the producers were like, "That's really funny when you say meatball. You want to say meatball again? You want to do it again?" And now he's
anything,
like,
anything that's like a catchphrase, anything we can put up on the bottom of the screen, just keep going. Just keep going.
Yeah, it's like, it's awful. And wasn't he the one who was called a meatball first? Or was that just in my brain?
It's fuzzy. I think you're right. I think he might have been called a meatball and then he just adopted it.
Then he sort of like, he's like, "I'm going to own this
story." Yeah.
Yeah. He took it. He took ownership of it and he made it his own, which was very brave. He is definitely looking for camera time. When Dorinda went nuts at that dinner, by the way, that's just Dorinda. She has a temper, and when it goes off, it goes off. And that was definitely not a made for TV moment by Dorinda. That was a Dorinda is seeing red, and these are the words coming out of her mouth. Josh, though, is just, he's just loud and brash. He drives me nuts with how much I feel like he thinks that we like him, you know?
Well, he is really excited to make a big move. I feel like that he is the person who could be part of overthrowing Paul, but he's like caught up in that, we've got to get Mark and Elena out of the house.
Tunnel,
like,
vision.
He's been really worked up about sort of like, and Boston Rob was really able to be effective at sort of like getting people worked up about, like, the, you know, not the the guy at the top of the pyramid, but sort of like those mid-level people, of like getting them fighting against the people they need to be working with.
Well, I mean, I always remember, didn't Boston Rob was the one who got you out, right? Wasn't he the one? He sort of
so long ago, Ben, I don't even remember.
I remember for you. I was very mad. I was like, how dare he take out my Rob Sesternino?
It was quite some time ago. Yeah.
But there is tunnel vision. Actually, you know what? We sort of have forgotten about Christmas. She was the one, we saw some early cracks during Josh's HOH, she was like, remember, this is your HOH and not Paul's. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she may be ready to make a move when the time is right. She may be just sort of enjoying this barrage of like scapegoating people, but she's probably waiting for the right moment to take down Paul. But I don't know. They are like Matt and Raven are useless. You know, they're totally useless people on this show. And I think they're very pliable by Paul. And that's two numbers. And that's a lot in this game.
Yeah, Matt has been really terrible. And now I hate that he's sort of like adopted the serial thing. I mean, I feel like that it was much more fun when we used to just be able to say, what is with this guy? All he's doing is eating cereal. And now the fact that he's like embraced it somehow, yeah, that somebody mentioned it to him, and now he's like making it his thing. Now it really just burns me up even more. Like he's like, yeah, embraced the meme of, yeah, I am useless. I am just a guy who sits here and eats cereal.
Yeah, it reminds me of that guy who would talk about bacon all day long a few seasons ago. Like, okay, you're really not that clever right now. Listen, Matt, if the defining centerpiece of your strategy is eating cereal, then please get off my TV right away.
Yeah, and he's like, well, I've eaten 600 bowls of cereal so far this season. I want to get to 1,000, so keep me here. And now he's just going to only talk about cereal now this week. I mean, it was very frustrating this past week. I'm sure it must have been for you as well to have all these players that are, you know, people are on the block and not even fighting to try to win the power of veto, where, yeah, you had a guy in Matt who was on the block, won the power veto, and didn't take himself out. Like, that wasn't even like an option, like, to think about. Like, nobody would have said to him like okay, we get it, you're on the block, you want to take yourself down,
yeah,
the power of veto. It's like, you know, everybody is just such a pushover to the whims of Paul,
and they're so short-sighted. Like, no one ever thinks, you know what, this is someone who actually might come after me or might be a problem for me, and this is an opportunity. Why don't I do this now? Or, hey, Cody has no one in this game. It might actually be useful to use him. Like, no one thinks like that. They just know that Cody is the villain, and this has been our plan, and we're just going to get him out. And, like, that might be very satisfying. You know, you're working towards something, but it's not... It's like, I play a lot of board games. I'm like obsessed with
what
board games. Everything from Catan to, like,
I've never done Catan.
Really?
No.
Do you play board games?
Ben, I don't have friends. If I had friends, I would play them. I had to have kids to play with me. But my kids only can play Don't Wake Daddy.
Oh, well, I have no children. So my board games are my children. I have 100 board games. It's crazy. Okay. Like, very intense strategy focused board games. One danger when you play a game is that there comes a time in a game where you have to shift strategies sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Some games you pick a strategy and you see it through and you don't waver. And the moment you waver, you lose the game. But some you have to know when it's time to change your tactic. And Big Brother is a tactical game. And these people don't realize. They put all their eggs in getting out Cody. Now they're focused on Mark. It's going to be too late for them to realize they're getting rid of all very important people that they should be allying with. People, it feels like Survivor, this has been learned. The past several seasons, we've seen a lot of alliances that have shifted and broken and split up, and the voting blocks thing. But Big Brother, fascinatingly, seems to follow this path every season.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I've heard this complaint lobbied at Survivor where there's too many super fans on Survivor. People have said Survivor is casting too many people that know what's going on, and the game Survivor has gotten too focused on strategy, and there's not enough focus on the characters now anymore on Survivor. What? And there's too much gameplay on Survivor. And with Big Brother, we're in the exact opposite position, where people say, like, hey, why don't they cast more fans? Although they did have Cameron and Ramses in the season who were advertised as the people who were the fans.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of people just mucking up the works that don't have any idea of how to play the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. First of all, I totally reject the idea that Survivor focuses too much on strategy. I think the strategy is great, and I think we learn about the characters through the strategy. I mean, I was sitting there bawling at the end of two seasons ago when Adam won and talked about his mom died of cancer and all that, and I was like crying. But I think part of it is because aside from being a sad season, the characters become so rich by the end of the season that it's just really on in its own different category. I think with Big Brother, there must be something about people trapped in a house that brings out some like really deep social psychological things, for lack of a better word. And there are probably many better words, but like somehow as much as you try to have gameplay, as much as you try to have certain things there, it's like it takes you back to high school where you have the cool kid. It's always the cool kids. The alpha males always do something. And then they're the girls who follow the alpha males and they're the outsiders. And it's just shocking how season after season, this is what happens. How many times do we have to watch a mega alliance in the beginning of the season put together by the bros come together and be like, dude, we do this. We're going to run the house for the next 8 weeks. And then by the end of the first week, it is completely imploded. I mean, how many times? When do people say, you know what, this is not a good idea because it doesn't work? But I feel like these powers that draw people together, that make them want to ally with other bros, for instance, it's so much more powerful than a desire to carry out a cogent strategy.
What do you think it is? Do you think that it's human nature, or do you think that it's the type of thing where people have just, you know, they bring these people in, a lot of them are recruits, they show them a season before, and then in the season, you know, because they're all showing them the recent seasons, that we're just on this feedback loop of people say, oh, okay, I'm in the Big Brother house, I guess that I'm supposed to make an alliance with, you know, the other, you know, seven bros in the house, and then just it just like keeps perpetuating itself.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's a lot of it as human nature. But it's interesting too, because there's probably an asterisk to it, which is if you put someone like Paul in the mix, from like a Boston Rob kind of person who can sort of like divide and conquer, and then he establishes what sort of human nature comes out. So like he's created an environment where there's just a bunch of followers, and so we see the human nature of following, if that makes sense. On different seasons you might see something else. I mean, I think the producers, they need to somehow find ways to break this stuff up, like maybe via competitions, like somehow find ways to create more cracks with these people. I don't know how. And again, I think their competitions definitely need to be refreshed to create some sort of drama, or I don't know. I do like this. I did like the temptation thing, you know, the Den of Temptation competition that they had way more than, for instance, Battle of the Block.
Yeah.
Ugh, so convoluted.
So let me ask you a question with the shows that you cover. How do you feel that Bravo does in terms of keeping these shows fresh? Because it does feel like that it's the same format. They change up the city, but I never hear people talk about how it's just the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it is. Sometimes it is the same thing over and over again. Bravo, you know, they do little tweaks to the cast. They usually fire one or two people, bring on one or two people. So they're always tweaking it. And I think they strike some fear into some of their stars. Like, you better bring us something interesting, otherwise you're going to be fired. They, you know, it's different when it's a competition, when there's not a competition or an explicit competition. So you get like a different vibe. But I think also Bravo at this point, they're like 10 years in, 10 years plus of Real Housewives. They pretty much know what they're doing. They know how to get it done. Being on Bravo has a lot of cachet. It's like a very premium sort of spot for a reality star. And if you're on it, you don't want to lose it. And if they're saying bring something, otherwise you're going to lose it, you're going to bring something. And I don't know if on Big Brother anyone is saying to the contestants, could you bring some strategy? I don't know if they're allowed to legally, because it's like a game show, right? I feel like that's probably some of it.
Can I give you my pitch for the Bravo universe? Tell me if it's good or not. I think that every one of these shows, I think that in the finale, they vote somebody out of the group. They're not back for next season.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great idea. I mean, they kind of already do that.
But it should be like revealed on the show. Like, I think that and it's like a topic of conversation like throughout the year. Like, so like, who do you think we should get rid of? And I think it'd make everybody like real paranoid, and there would be, you know, even more fighting.
I mean, that's kind of an amazing idea for a reality show, like a meta, some giant meta tribal council, in the sense that we're leading up to it the entire season. Who is going to get the axe? You know, rather than an elimination every week, it's just, it's all building up. It's kind of like the big murder mystery,
yeah.
Right?
It's who got killed
or who done it?
Like the real whodunit.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a great idea. They should do that. But I feel like there are certain power players on Bravo, like a Bethany Frankel or a Nene Leakes, and they'll just decide, okay, I want that person fired. If you want me to come back next year, that you fire that person.
Yeah.
So it sort of happens.
Okay. In addition to the Bravo stuff and Big Brother, what else are you watching this summer?
That's basically been it. I've been watching tons of Bravo, tons of Big Brother, and I'm watching Twin Peaks.
Okay.
That's like my
Did you watch the original?
I watched the original one. I'd never watched Fire Walk With Me, but then I was like, I love Twin Peaks. I had the soundtrack. I have the soundtrack, in fact. And I was like, it's back, so I'm watching it. I don't understand what's going on, but I'm on board.
All right. Well, it was great to catch up with you. If people want to check out Watch What Crappens, what's the easiest way for them to find you?
Well, if you go to watchwhatcrappens.com, you go there, you can find all our social media links. You know, you can see where like my Twitter and Instagram is, what the show's Twitter and Instagram is, what Ronnie's, all that stuff. You'll see our episodes. We also have links to tickets to our live shows. We're actually doing a live show downtown Los Angeles on September 2nd at the Terragram Ballroom. And Jeff Lewis and Jenny Poulos and Gage Edward, all from Flipping Out, are going to be there, which is super cool because they're really funny. And apparently they don't do live stuff very often. So definitely, if you're into that, you should come. We're also going to be recapping Scary Island, which is a seminal episode from Real Housewives of New York City. So if you've never,
so what do you do
never seen Scary
so
Island,
watch that episode and then talk about it? Or people, they have homework and then they show up and then you're going to talk about it?
Yeah, it's going to be a homework situation. We don't have time to watch the episode, then talk about it, then have the Flipping Out people on, but
that's
we're
interesting.
We'll,
I like that idea.
Yeah, you know, we'll get there, and we'll just talk. I mean, Ronnie and I, our whole thing is that we recap these shows and we sit and we go pretty much scene by scene, and we go on these crazy tangents and do these miserable impersonations. We've been doing it for 5 years, but we never did it for Scary Island because that predated our podcast. So we're going back to this episode where Kelly Bensimon and Bethany Frankel have an epic fight. We're just gonna give it the Crappens treatment, and then, you know, have Jeff on and Jenny, etc., and then try to get some people up on stage. It's gonna be super fun.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Check out Watch What Crappens, and then also you could follow Ben on Twitter. He is at @BSideBlog. Your
yes.
Old name.
Yeah, well, my name on TVgasm was B-Side, and then after TVgasm, I started up my blog, B-Side Blog, where I write a lot about board games now. See, I love board
games.
Yeah,
I'm looking at B-Side Blog. Freighter's Gonna Freight, a review of Rain River Trade.
I'm so nerdy.
And then, okay, yes. Adventures in Game Time, Ponzi Scheme. That's a game?
That's a game. There's like a game for everything.
How
everything.
Is Ponzi Scheme?
It's good. I like it. I feel like there are better games out there. If anyone's looking for an interesting game, Concordia is excellent. Railways of the World. Something like next level beyond Catan.
Okay.
Or also just start with Catan.
Awesome. Well, I would love, you know, if you ever have like some sort of like, you know, a open game invitation night, I would love to do something. But I feel like I'd be like, I need to like know the rules. Like, I think that people think I'm like, I know everything about strategy. But it's just like, no, I've just watched Survivor for long enough that I know all the rules. Like, I have a real learning curve with. Like,
yeah, you'll be fine. I'm always looking for players, because that's the thing about having a hobby that's dependent on other people. You always need other people. So I'm always looking for players. I will gladly invite you to board game.
You ever
night.
Watch The Genius?
No, what's that?
Okay. Oh, I'll send you a link to check it out. It's a South Korean game show. Very, very heavily strategic. Subtitles, though. You got to really
okay.
pay attention.
All right. I'm up for it. I like a challenge.
All right. Well, good stuff. Well, thank you so much, Ben. Always a pleasure to catch up. And congratulations on all the success with the podcast.
Thank you. You too. So wonderful catching up with you. Thank you so much for having me on. on.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Ben Mandelker from Watch What Crappens talking about what he's up to and Big Brother 19. The next time we're talking about Big Brother 19, it's going to be Sunday night after the next episode, and that's going to be on the West Coast time. But if you're on the East Coast and you want to stay up late, we do have a treat for you. Brendan and Rachel are going to be joining us to talk about everything going on Big Brother 19. I'm sure we'll get to see some more of what went on behind the scenes during the double eviction. And then, of course, we'll see how the next HOH competition plays out. So that's going to be on Sunday night at 12:15 Eastern time and then 9:15 p.m. Pacific. Of course, Game of Thrones is going to be occupying my time at the normal Big Brother time. So I do apologize about that. That's going to be the last week for that. And then we'll end up doing, for the Game of Thrones finale, I will have the live podcast for Big Brother, because Game of Thrones is going to be extended. We will do that on Monday morning following the Big Brother episode next Sunday night. So I do apologize about the inconvenience this summer, but only two more weeks of Game of Thrones, and then we'll get back on the regular Sunday schedule for the rest of the season. So looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.